In recent years, there's been a trend in prosecuting juvenile offenders. The states have rewritten their laws to make it easier to try them as adults. The Justice Department has just put out some numbers that show how strong that trend has been. From the mid-1980s until the late 90s, the number of prison inmates under the age of 18 has more than doubled. The government report finds that minors still account for a very small share of the inmate population, but it finds that younger offenders are far more likely to go to prison now than 15 years ago.
Today, the story of one such inmate. We're following up on a case we reported 2 years ago, the story of a boy of 15 who killed a man. The killer was a conscientious high school honor student. The victim was the man who supplied his father with crack cocaine. When he was 16, he was tried as an adult, convicted, and sentenced to 20 years. Now he is 18. And this is what has happened to him since.
At his trial in Milwaukee in October 1997, he was a pudgy teenager in a suit and tie, his face scrubbed, his blonde hair neatly combed. One juror said she saw him at the defense table and was aghast at how young he looked. He was a child, she said.
Do you solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Thank you. Please be seated. Make yourself comfortable. And would you spell your first and last name for our court reporter?
J-E-R-E-M-Y. And Armstrong is A-R-M-S-T-R-O-N-G.
Thank you.
Today, he wears prison greens, property of the state of Wisconsin.
Jeremy Jason Armstrong, 342-386. I'm at Green Bay Correctional Facility. I'm almost 3 years into my sentence.
His white Adidas sneakers, a birthday present from his mother, are the rare artifacts of an individual identity. That is a casualty of the central fact of prison life.
The complete control that they have over you. They can take everything. Everything, you're naked. You have nothing. And you can't imagine it until it happens.
What do you mean? How does that happen?
When you go to the hole, that was my first experience with it. They strip you. And they give you an orange suit. Put your orange suit on and that's it. Or they give you a blanket once you're in there, once you're in your room. But getting stripped is no way to describe it. It just takes everything.
And then there is the noise.
You would never expect how loud 300 people on one side of a tier can be. And it's not just how loud, it's just how constant. It's like it never stops.
The noises of...
Of everything. Toilets flushing, people talking, televisions, radios, arguments, fights, buzzers, bells, counts.
And guards telling people to cut it out.
Yeah. There's this one guard, he likes to click the handcuffs all the time, too. Yeah, I'm in cell 10, and that's real close to the desk, so I get to listen to that all day.
Yeah, just a nervous habit, or is he trying to say something?
I don't know what he does that for. I haven't figured it out yet.
When Jeremy Armstrong was growing up in Milwaukee, he got involved with drugs and guns, and not surprisingly, his father, Robert Armstrong, was a drug addict who lived in a crack house. The man Jeremy murdered was his father's housemate, Robert Drury, a crack dealer who had threatened Jeremy in the past with violence and sexual abuse. Jeremy's parents never married. 2 years ago, his mother, Cheryl Schabelsky, told us about her life. She is addicted to methadone and suffers from lupus and schizophrenia.
I rely on the government for my income. I've held jobs in the past, and they always ended with a nervous breakdown. I've been to college, and that ended with a nervous breakdown. So my son's been very helpful in actually supporting me. When I was psychotic, he was the reason I would go into the hospital before I had men in my life.
Jeremy bounced between his parents' homes, but when he was 15, the year he committed murder, he spent most nights with a neighbor, Kim Levine, who testified at his murder trial.
Kim, do you see that young man sitting over there at council table?
Yes, I do.
Do you recognize him?
Yes, I do.
Jeremy Armstrong?
Yes, my son.
Jeremy led a double life. Early every morning, he escaped his drug-ridden neighborhood and fractured family and traveled cross-town to a Catholic high school. He would get there before 7:30. At school, he behaved impeccably, made straight A's, and impressed his principal, Jeff Monday.
He could always be found sitting on the bench outside of my office preparing for his classes. He would always be studying. Occasionally, he would be working with other students, tutoring or helping them prepare for their studies.
Jeremy claimed at his trial that the day he shot Robert Drury, he was only planning to rob him at gunpoint. He told his lawyer, Robin Shello, that he needed money to turn the electricity back on. He also said that Drury threatened him, mocked him, and then made a move for the gun. It was a fearful, impulsive, unintended killing, said the defense. But the prosecutor, Lavelle Johnson, said it was a shot fired in anger, anger at Drury's threats and verbal abuse.
Was he laughing at you?
Yes.
Did that make you angry?
No.
It did not make you angry that he was laughing at you?
Not really. Made me feel little.
Make you feel what?
Little.
Made you feel little?
Yeah, yes.
Is that a bad feeling or a good one?
Bad.
The jury acquitted Jeremy Armstrong of intentional homicide, which carried a mandatory life sentence. But it found him guilty instead of reckless homicide, and that gave the trial judge a choice. He could have sentenced Jeremy as a juvenile to a maximum of 3 years in a secure facility. His lawyer argued for that sentence. So did the auxiliary bishop of Milwaukee, who met with Jeremy and took up his cause. But the judge chose to sentence him as an adult to 20 years in prison. And at this point, prison means the Wisconsin State Correctional Institution, 120 miles north of Milwaukee, at Green Bay. Green Bay is a maximum security prison, a century-old historic landmark building packed with young men, mostly from Milwaukee. Jeremy says that at Green Bay, he has stayed away from drugs and gangs, both of which, he says, are much in evidence. But he did get into one fight in the lunchroom. Jeremy is about 5'5" and round-shouldered. His fair skin still suffers from adolescent acne. In prison, he looks more like a potential victim than victimizer. But he says one day, just after he'd completed the prison's anger management course, he foolishly lost his temper with another inmate.
A guy just kind of took a liking to me, I guess you would say. He started calling me all these names in the lunchroom and kind of ride me, and I hit him with a tray.
What was he saying to you that led you to do that?
He was, you know, just calling me a bitch and, you know, all this shit, and just riding me.
So you hit him with a tray?
Yeah.
What's the tray made of?
It's pretty hard plastic. It's about a half inch thick.
Where'd you hit him?
In the head.
Did you hurt him?
No.
And what happened?
Threw a couple punches, got tackled by the guard, and stripped off to the hole.
The hole means what?
Segregation.
So how is life in segregation different from everyday life?
You never leave. You're always in the room. They feed you in the room. Do everything in the room.
24 hours a day?
Yeah. All the time.
Day after day?
After day after day.
How many days did you spend in segregation?
I spent 78 days in seg.
What do you do for 78 days?
Do a lot of sleeping. Because there wasn't much light. You couldn't really read. And there weren't any books, so it didn't make no sense to read.
Were you not permitted to have a book in segregation?
You couldn't have your own books, but they had like a book cart. There were four books for, I think there were 32 guys back there. So you didn't do much reading.
Those books, he recalls, included a copy of Sports Illustrated and a copy of Life magazine. Back in general population, he says, he has recently read John Steinbeck's East of Eden, and he has Shakespeare's Othello and George Orwell's 1984 on loan from the library. Jeremy Armstrong's education at Green Bay exemplifies the absurdity of prison life. For attending a high school equivalency course, he was paid 28 cents an hour, and he got out of his cell to go to class. So the logical strategy for the former honor student was to get his diploma, but to take as long as he could in getting it.
I kind of, you know, just took my time. I didn't go with this. It worked to capability, but I didn't really slack off either.
How did you manage to stretch this out exactly?
They give you they don't really teach you. They give you worksheets. And as you complete the worksheets, you kind of, they keep passing you on and give you pretests. When the teacher feels you're ready, she'll sign you up for the HSED test. You know, just do the worksheets very slowly, you know.
These are worksheets in what subject?
Every subject, math, English, social studies.
When you were back in high school, back in Milwaukee, you would have taken pre-calculus that year.
Yeah.
Were the math problems you were getting here that hard?
No. It was basic algebra. A minus 7 equals 12, you know.
And your job was to stretch that out for as long as possible.
It's not as hard as it sounds.
You could get a problem that easy wrong if you put your mind to it.
Yeah, you can. You know. Just add one and you know it's wrong by one.
So how long did you manage to stretch your high school courses out here to?
Excluding my time to the whole, about a year and a half.
About a year and a half. And if you'd come in here and said, I want to do this as fast as possible and get my high school diploma?
Probably could have got out of here in 2 months.
In 2 months.
And that just for the fact that it takes a while to get signed up.
Jeremy says he's looked at some correspondence courses for college, but he can't afford them. He was accepted for a vocational class at the prison in masonry. He's learning to slather mortar onto bricks and getting paid 28 cents an hour again. The class is taught by Jack Weir, a former prison guard who's also a mason and cement finisher by trade.
What's going to happen when you get out on the street and if you get into masonry, probably 75 to 80% of any brick or block that you ever lay is going to be laid to the line.
Jeremy is enthusiastic about what he's heard from Weir, that there are jobs for bricklayers on the outside, jobs that pay good money, and employers who wouldn't bar a man because of his past. Jack Weir says Jeremy is about one-third of the way through the course.
Basically, you're looking at an average student like Jeremy coming in till the time he completes, you're looking at anywhere from 8 to 12 months, depending on his situation. I have a minimum requirement for them as far as their projects and their curriculum, and they have to complete that. And some guys, it takes a little more than 720 hours. But Jeremy's actually ahead a little bit on his projects as far as the time factor.
So for him to get another 500 hours, about how many months, you think?
You're looking at about 5 to 6 months.
5 to 6 months.
Yeah. Excuse me, I'll get to the phone.
Jeremy may have a problem finishing the masonry course because in a few months, he also becomes eligible to be transferred out of state. That's how Wisconsin handles its prison population boom.
They send a resume down south for you. And as soon as they receive that, they decide if they want you or not. And they told me they wanted me because I don't have a big criminal. You know, that's the only time I've been to the hole is once, you know, so it's not like I'm a big institution risk.
Who wants you?
CCA down in Tennessee and Oklahoma.
The Corrections Corporation of America.
Yeah.
A private company that runs prisons.
Yeah, they take a lot of Wisconsin inmates.
And do you now expect to be shipped off to a CCA prison?
I don't want to, but yeah, I expect.
What happens to your masonry course?
It stops, I guess. I won't get credit for it.
If you acted worse here,
they'd keep me here.
They'd keep you here.
Every battery or every major ticket you get like a 6 to 10 a year hold, you know. So they hold you here. But you know, it's been about a year since that battery, and I'm just ripe for the bus.
Well, you had a scheme to keep yourself in high school for a while. You wouldn't pick up a ticket just to avoid transfer, would you?
I've thought about it, but I don't know the benefits. They cancel each other out. Because if I go down there, that's a medium max prison, so you kind of have more privileges. I really don't know which one would be better.
The auxiliary bishop of Milwaukee, Richard Skelba, who wanted Jeremy to be sentenced as a juvenile, is very critical of this process of outstating. He sees it as a perverse incentive. Do well in prison and make it harder for your family to come see you. Bishop Skelba corresponds with Jeremy and has paid him 2 visits in Green Bay. It's a relationship that Jeremy Armstrong values highly. He says the bishop has become his close friend.
He tells me about how he's doing out there, what programs he's doing, what trips he's been on. You know, he helps me with my problems here and tells me how I should deal with, you know, the frustrations of this life.
What kinds of things?
The most frustrating thing in here is just dealing with the same stupid people every day. They're not just to cut on a person's intelligence, they're just guys who choose to be dumb by choice. You know, it's hard to put up with. Then you get all your news from outside through mail, and like my neighbor, the lady who was taking care of me, she passed away last month. And she was my second mother.
She was your mother, originally.
She took care of me when my mom and my dad were having...
What did she die of?
She had a seizure while she was sleeping, and I think she choked to death.
Well, that must have been terribly upsetting.
Man, you just don't know. They give you a little note and say, oh, this such and such a person passed away at such and such a time. It just drives home the point of where you're at.
Other news from home, his mother moved to Green Bay to visit him twice a week, but he doesn't know that she would follow him out of state. His father, who got clean for Jeremy's trial, went back on drugs and is now in rehab. His lawyer has an appeal in the works, and his first parole hearing could be as soon as 2002. Under Wisconsin corrections practices, he is unlikely to serve beyond 2010. Had he been sentenced as a juvenile, he would have spent the time since his trial in a facility with other young offenders, and by now, he would be free. When he first entered Green Bay, at age 16, Jeremy Armstrong was one of the youngest inmates ever at the maximum security prison. Now, at 18, his age is unremarkable, and he is the way of the future. Prison staff, we were told, have been advised of what to expect in the way of inmates nowadays, younger men doing time for more violent offenses.